This talk was given by Jeffrey Shugen Arnold Roshi at Zen Mountain Monastery. Shugen Roshi is the abbot of the monastery and the Zen Center of New York City. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered free of charge. If you would like to make a donation or to find out more about our retreats and residency programs, visit us online at zmm.org. Thanks for listening.
Good morning, everyone. And good morning, all of you who are joining us this morning. So this morning during service, we invoked all of our Dharma ancestors. So I want to acknowledge the Munsi Lenape people who lived on this land and in this region for thousands and thousands of years before they were forced out. So we are now the recipients, both of all of their culture and their love for this land, as well as for the misguided efforts and intentions and views that forced them off of it. We are beginning our Ango this morning, our training period. And this is as Master Dogen said, this authentic custom that maintains the Buddha Dharma Sangha treasure. This is a tradition specific in this form that dates back hundreds and hundreds of years. Forms of it exist in different schools of Buddhism. It exists within the Zen tradition, both in the current day Kaldong and Linji traditions, referred to somewhat differently, practiced a little bit differently. Master Dogen has a fascicle on the practice period, and in that he said, in an informal talk to open the practice period, Zhujing, my late master, old Buddha Tiantong, presented this poem. Piling up bones in an open field, gouging out a cave in empty sky, break through the barrier of dualism and splash in a bucket of pitch black lacquer. To grab hold of this spirit, to train constantly for 30 years, eating meals, sleeping, stretching your legs, this requires unstinting support. The structure of the 90-day summer spring practice period provides such support. He was speaking at the beginning of the summer training period, because that's traditionally when it's practiced, summer and winter. We do it in spring and fall. And in that way, it is one of the vessels of practice that has come down to us. There is the enlightenment of the Buddha. There are the teachings of the Buddha. There are the different practices that the Buddha and his successors of enlightened beings passed down to us. And then there are the particular containers in which all of that came together and all of that comes together in a way such as Ango. So that there is this three-month period of training in which all of that is joined together. Because with a deeply enlightened experience, such as the Buddha had, with his teachings, there's the question of what do you do with those teachings? How do you enliven those? How do you awaken those within ourselves? And so there are practices that are taught and then are passed down. But then in what context are those practices taken up? The Buddha taught an eightfold path, that the whole of one's life, in the Mahayana tradition, the whole of one's life, in a sense, is the practice period. But because that's so large, and in a sense so demanding and easy to get lost in, there are particular vehicles in which those that enlightened experience, those teachings, these practices are joined together for a particular period of time. Ango is one of those. Sesshin is one of those. In a sense, you could say each day that you practice is one of those particular forms. And so when Dogen speaks of this as an authentic custom handed down, that's not a small thing. Right? How do we actually do this? And how do we do this year after year, generation after generation? How do you pass down teachings? And not just teachings, because those can be easily misunderstood. But that the practices, and then the ways to take up those practices so that there's a whole integrated world in which to hold all of this and take it in within ourselves. And so this three-month training period, this oceanic gathering of the Sangha of the Ten Directions, Xu Jing speaks of piling up bones in an open field. We might think of that as letting go of all of what is unnecessary, of everything that is unskillful, all the things that are not really important that we should be attending to during these 3 months. Our attachments, our fears, our expectations, our false views. Think of those as a pile of dry bones. And dry because all of the stuff that entices us, enchants us, that gets us embroiled in those things has been chewed up, spit out, burned off, dried up. In an open field, these dry bones are piled up. This field is always open. It has no doors, no boundaries. And that's the nature of your mind. It's the nature of this day that we begin with. It's the mind that we will practice this whole Anga with. And with that mind, we gouge out a cave in empty sky. We could say that this is what Dogen means when he speaks of eating meals and sleeping and stretching your legs, doing zazen, chanting the sutras, the everyday activities of a person living in Buddha Dharma. We call this to train ceaselessly for 30 days, for 3 months, for 30 years, for a lifetime, so that we can break through that barrier of duality, of things seemingly set apart from each other, and splash in a bucket of pitch black lacquer. And that's an image that's used to express the realized truth of non-differentiation, that within that black lacquered bucket, all things are realized as having one essential nature. So we can free ourselves of our perceptions that are part of and participate in and help to perpetuate a world that is at war with itself, a people that are at war with its planet, our Earth, our Mother Earth, the people that are at odds with each other, we ourselves that are at odds with ourselves. And this has been taking place for hundreds of years. You know, it might be reasonable to say that in the establishment of this country hundreds of years ago was a deliberate breaking away from the kind of tradition-bound experience of the early European colonialists who came here. And so there is a part of our culture, our society, which is has been all too eager to in a sense, always be moving forward, always be moving beyond wherever we are, to not really have reverence for tradition. And tradition can bind us. But these traditions, if we use them well, help us to free ourselves. And so this is a very old tradition that goes back to the time of the Buddha. It was called the Rains Retreats at the time of the Buddha, Varsa in Sanskrit. Because of the rainy seasons, the monks and nuns could not travel. They were not allowed to travel. And it actually sought to predate the Buddhist community, that wandering mendicants would do the same during the rainy seasons in India each year. They wouldn't travel because it just wasn't realistic. And also that they would, there was a concern of them killing insects and worms and crawling creatures because of the rains. And so during that time, the communities would gather together and practice intensively. In the guidelines for Zen monasteries, Dogen says, when a seeker comes to a monastery wanting to join in a practice period, the person should arrive half a month in advance so that the welcoming tea and other entering rituals can be performed without haste. So in deference for your busy lives, we have shortened that to a morning. Or you might say we arrived yesterday with the Zazen Kai to begin preparing. Of course, the preparations for this didn't just begin yesterday. I began pretty much after the last ongo ended. It's kind of how it goes. So I am, in my mind at least, always essentially in one, actively in ongo or preparing for the next one. And then as we got closer, the other teachers, training staff, and we actually hold it back, right? I always want to hold it back to not let it out and broadcast it too early so that students have a sense of period of time between the ongos. So then when we let it out, you're ready for it, eager. To take of what is directly before us each day, each moment, practicing this Dharma. You know, this is such an essential part, the essential part of our practice. It's something we speak about all the time. And it is one of the most difficult things, you know, to have constancies, to be steady and straightforward and consistent. It's not so easy, right? Because our minds are so unstable. They're not constant. And I don't mean constant in the sense of fixed or rigid or permanent, but in the sense of steady, consistent. And so on the Ango board that's in the back of the hall, that is part of the tradition, in which all the resident participants of the monastery and the Sangha and the temple and the city are listed, in the four corners, there are the words origination, virtue, perseverance, and attainment. So origination, we begin at the beginning. We start where we are. And from that place, which is the only place where we can be and begin, we go to the root. To the root, to the origin, the source of both our delusion, of all that binds us, and also of our liberation. Virtue, to follow your heart. That's why it's important to begin the Ango with an establishing of your intention, particularly for those of us who are living Buddha Dharma and do this every 3 months or every 6 months, we begin an Ango. So that each time we begin again, in a very real sense, we are not doing something we've done before. We are doing something new. We are drawing upon what we have done before. We're learning how to do Ango more and more skillfully, with more depth, with more breath. But we begin it fresh. This is such an important aspect of our practice and such a beautiful aspect of our practice, to actually not just speak about beginner's mind, but know how to actually bring that forth. And so to follow your heart, to establish your intention, to practice our vows. And in that, to be steady, to persevere, to be flexible, because each day arrives as its own, and sometimes arises with unplanned things that we need to attend to or unexpected changes. And so if we're not flexible, then our intention can become too tight, too rigid. But if we don't establish that intention, then we can be so flexible that nothing happens. So to wake up each day in the mind of Ango, of training, of the training period, to wake up and know what your day is in terms of practice. Not to predict what's going to happen, but to know how you want to enter into it. It's very important. Right? It helps to transform this sort of what can be a very powerful but vague notion of dharma, of practice, of wanting to be free, of wanting to practice. But to bring that into clarity with our intention, our aspiration, makes it real, makes it something that we are now in relationship to. I'm now in relationship to my intention, to my vow. Not having established that, what am I in relationship to? And that too has a quality of being settled and established and something that I sort of gauge or work with my practice in relationship to. But it's just something we're doing with our mind. It doesn't bind us. It's not a law. There's nothing rigid about it. And in a sense, that's why we have to create it anew each day. But realize we're creating something, we're doing something with our mind to create something that is intended to be helpful, powerful. And then attainment, to let that aspiration give voice to each of us, our confidence and our trust in our Buddha nature, our confidence in our capacity to practice. Just that. Not to add all the other stuff that gets, as the Kiwis would say, wonky. That makes it complicated, that makes it unrealistic. Just that I have the capacity to practice. And within that, I have the capacity to do that to the best of my ability. Not that it's going to be perfect, not that it's going to be any particular thing, but that I can do that. And to not be afraid to have a large aspiration. A large aspiration for what each of us wants in this life, to bring forth in this life, to awaken in this life. How much confidence or faith do we have in our capacity to allow ourselves to live our Buddha nature, which is a fundamental, vast, spacious, and free nature? You know, if we can't give voice to that, we should try. In other words, if I don't feel like I have enough confidence, or I feel too timid, or that's not for me, or who am I kidding, or not in this lifetime, or this is not the right, I don't have the right circumstances, all of those conditions that we can create and impose and think, yeah, those are all true. We are binding ourselves. Having Buddha nature means that, yes, we always practice within conditions, but none of those have the capacity to bind us inherently. And so we can begin by giving that a voice, speaking it, and hearing it through your own ears. That does something. It changes something. It actually makes something that is always imminently possible more possible. During the Ango, we were studying Dogen's fascicle from his Shobogenzo collection of teachings called Ten Directions. The fascicle is called Ten Directions. He wrote this when he was 43, 1243, so this is hundreds of years ago. And in that, he said, he began the fascicle, a single fist, just this, is the Ten Directions. A sincere heart, just one, is simply the Ten Directions crystal clear. The single fist. And this fist is not a fist because we can associate a fist with aggression and violence. It is not that. It is just a hand. It is just a hand being raised. Just this is the Ten Directions. It is just a hand, just a fist. And it reaches everywhere. A sincere heart, yours. Just one is simply the Ten Directions crystal clear. Ango means peaceful dwelling. And in the lines that Gokhan read, some of them were mine, some of them were Dogen's, this emphasis on peaceful dwelling, why so much emphasis on peaceful dwelling? Because it's our nature, because it's our aspiration, because it's our birthright, in a sense, our capacity, and because we have such a penchant for creating not peace. And so to invoke that again and again, there is peaceful dwelling. And in Ango in particular, we bring our attention to the fact that peaceful dwelling is practiced always in the place where we find ourselves. You wake up in it. You get out of bed in it. We go through the day in it. It is where we find ourselves. There is no other training ground. And when that is done with a sincere heart that is truthful, that is caring, that is open, that is committed, that is courageous, there will be challenges along the way, but they are workable. When we practice with this sincere heart, which is a deeply desiring heart, it's a heart that wants to practice the Dharma, wants to be free. It's like when you're really, really hungry, it's not complicated what you need to do. There may be complications in terms of you satisfying that hunger. But when that hunger is very strong, you find a way. In the fascicle, Dogen said, this Saha land can be called Shakyamuni Buddha's land. Take up this Saha world. Clarify whether it is eight liang or half a jin, and whether the Buddha land of the Ten Directions is 7 or 8 feet. So Saha means the world. It usually refers to the world of samsara. But the word itself means the world of endurance, of patience, of perseverance, because it's a world where there is, that is troubled. It also refers to a world in which there's cause and effect, that every action has an effect, and that we are inextricably bound up in that. We cannot escape the effects of our actions. And so Dogen is saying this Saha land, this samsara world, our world, could be called Shakyamuni Buddha's land. Take it up, Dogen says, and see. Liang and Jin, I think, are measures of weight. So he's saying, see how light or heavy it is. See how short or long it is. In other words, study its qualities and characteristics. Get to know it. Carefully observe. What is it that's directly before you? Dogen says, raise a single fist, just this, and you have the whole universe. And so, moment by moment, something appears. Objects, people, situations, relationships, tasks. Take this up, Dogen says, as a single fist, just this. See it as it actually is. See it with a sincere heart. Want to see it as it actually is. To awaken means to awaken from a place of sleep. Our eyes are open. We see. But what we see, for the most part, is what we have been, in a sense, taught to see. Taught by associations, by culture, just by the way our minds work. By the world we live in, by the time and place we live in. And the things that we see are, we're not only taught what to see and how to see it, but how to understand it. We see someone. We see something. But so much of the time, the world around us has told us what that thing means. What does it mean in relationship to me, to you? So Dogen is saying, there is another way. We'll also be studying the Faith Mind poem. And this is a poem by the third Chinese ancestor. So beginning with Bodhidharma, Hueka, and then Zhangzhi Sumzan was the third ancestor who died in the early 600s. So this is very early in the Zen tradition, having traveled from India to China and beginning to be established, having arrived in China much earlier, but the development of the Zen tradition. So this is very early. And so this poem is attributed to Singsan, the Faith Mind, and it's one of the most well-known poems in the Zen tradition. Master Zhao Zhou is one of the great masters of our tradition, had a great affinity for this poem. He quotes it many, many times, and I'll be drawing both on the poem itself and some of the dialogues that Zhao Zhou had using this poem with his own students throughout the Ango. It begins, "The great way is not difficult for those who have no preferences." And further on says, if you don't discriminate between coarse and fine, you won't be tempted to prejudice and opinion. And so it's really talking about, all throughout the poem, about the fact that when we open our senses, we see the world and our mind divides things. That's just what it does. It differentiates, discriminates one thing from the other so that we can navigate. But the discriminating mind doesn't just see things as their differences. It imputes meaning and significance, weight and length, purpose, worthiness, goodness and badness. And of course, this is the root of every hurtful action. Every hurtful action, every thought or word or action that causes anyone or anything, any harm, any pain, is based in that very mind of preferences, of grasping, of attachment, of views, of prejudice, of opinion. But because our mind does inherently, naturally separate and distinguish, and that is a necessary thing, how do we do that? How do we break through that barrier of dualities, which doesn't just see things as different, but sees them as high and low, as superior and inferior, as worth loving and worth hating, as worth giving birth to and worth destroying, or as not even worthy of our attention? What is it that divides sacred from mundane, practice from not practice, worthwhile from pointless? Buddhism teaches, and what we see for ourselves, is that every blessed thing, as Dogen says, fulfills its virtue, is complete unto itself. Our liking and disliking, our loving and hating, those things don't exist within things. When we look at someone and love or hate them, that doesn't exist in that person. It doesn't exist in any quality that person has. But we will act on that as though it does. Our preferences are products, constructions of our conditioned mind. Prejudice and opinion are co-products of a mind that is intertwined with cultures, societies. Again, that creates the meaning, imputes the meaning. They inform each other. That's always been so. And so we come back again to peaceful dwelling. So we could think of this piling up of bones as also piling up all of our inheritances, all the things we've been taught, that we believe, that we think, that we're convinced about. I mentioned the bumper sticker I saw recently. It just said, "I could be wrong." Just allowing for that possibility that when we look and something seems so absolute, I could be wrong. There could be something I do not understand. Can we allow that? So Anga is a time we practice freeing ourselves of our discriminations between coarse and fine. Of, as the faith mind says, setting up what you like against what you dislike, which is, he says, the dis-ease of the mind. Which is why the Buddha is often likened to a great healer, profound healer. Healing this deepest existential and always contemporary illness that we call delusion. And so we return to peaceful dwelling, which is the place where we are, the Buddha land, the Saha world, this mind that we have, that we carry, that we inhabit, that inhabits us, that we that has been deeply trained, but without our knowing it, largely. And now, in practice, we train the mind now consciously, deliberately. Not to acquire some skill or take on some qualities that are alien to us, but actually to return to our natural state. To reclaim our basic space. And so the vessels in which we do that are our zazen. Sitting on this diamond seat, the diamond which cuts through all of our delusions. We practice liturgy, bringing forth the sutras in our own body and mind, bringing forth our morning services at our own altars, where we give voice to our own intentions and aspirations. Bringing forth the four immeasurables, the Metta Sutta, where we cultivate compassion and loving kindness. We study the precepts. What are the particular ways, the universally human ways, in which we cause trouble for ourselves in the world, in which we create harm? And when we see into each of those impulses, those desires, those actions, those thoughts and words, and we free ourselves of the binding agents, if you will, the clinging, the grasping, the fear, the self-centeredness, the self-clinging, the false views, when we pick clean those bones, then what we realize is that that stinginess and taking becomes generosity, that fear and anger and hatred becomes loving kindness and compassion, that all forms of delusion become enlightenment. And so we study the precepts, we study the Dharma. We will be studying the teachings of the 10 directions and the faith mind. And I wanted to work with those together because I think they work together very nicely. Because I wanted to, for us to work with some teachings of Dogen during the Ango. And I wanted to work with the faith mind because of its attention, its keen attention to the ways in which our minds divide, and in those divisions cause so much pain. Because as we know and we talk about amongst ourselves and we hear talk about all over the place, we're living in an extremely divided time, in which divisions have kind of become a way of life, a way of working, a way of not working, a way of abdicating, a way of not examining, a way of not holding ourselves accountable, a way that is not, it seems, very sustainable for long. And so this time of division has to resolve towards something. It could be our ruin. That's always a possibility, given that all things are impermanent. Everything that rises, falls. All empires eventually turn to dust. Is that the time that we're in? It could also be the signs, we're seeing the signs of something not new, something that has been here all along, but that is in great demand and is being shown that its time has come, that is to be awakened as Buddhist, as non-Buddhist, in the sense of enlightenment and in the sense of just basic decency, honesty, truthfulness, good qualities, being courteous, simple things. It could be a time of recognizing that the vessels and containers that we've been, that have been maintained for hundreds, thousands of years, but actively for hundreds of years on in this land, are untenable. That there is no future in continuing these systems of oppression, of racism, of sexism, of hatred, of violence, of non-compassion, of not caring about each other. Like, that just basically doesn't work. It doesn't work in a world where people have to live together. And so, that's why I thought these teachings would be good for us to study. We will practice our solitude. So each of us, in our liturgy, we give voice to aspirations, intentions that we're all taking up together. May we together realize the Buddha way. That's an intention, aspiration that we make together. But you make it within yourself. Both are happening. And the same is true here. We will practice together at the same time that we're practicing together. In Dogen's fascicle, he says, the Eno prepares a preliminary list of the names of the participants according to their Dharma ordination seniority, because it was primarily a monastic tradition. There was a hierarchy, so everybody was sort of lined up in terms of their seniority of ordination. So it's kind of like your birth order for a monastic. I've long thought that I was born on the day that I was ordained. That's kind of how it felt. And he says, on that list it should read, in such and such a monastery, on such and such a mountain, in such and such a province, of such and such a country, the names in the ocean assembly forming the practice period are as follows. And so we have on our wall here, as many of you know, who have been here for Ango, the list of all of you who are going to be practicing this practice period. What does it mean to practice? The Buddha said it means to cultivate the discipline of non-harming and of bringing forth what is good. The discipline of calming the mind, our distractedness, our restlessness, our agitated, our obsessive spinning mind, and our wisdom. Those three elements, the Buddha said, are the three training wheels. We can also think of practice as being what we do with our mind, your attention, your alertness, to remember, to bring yourself back, and to be able to remember in certain moments when you go this way, to remember what is likely to happen. When you go this way, to remember what is likely to happen and to choose well. The mind that deepens and broadens, the mind that is right here, the mind that is 10 directions. To practice means your body. We have each received this body in which we can practice. And so to cultivate a body that is alert, awake, key, alive, and is relaxed, at ease, reclaiming its natural serenity, its natural harmony within itself. To be intimate within the body, with sensation, with the movement of energy, with the rising and falling, the fluctuations of emotions, of energy, of emotion, feelings, thoughts, and our heart. This one sincere heart, Dogen says, that is open, that is trusting, that is resilient. And to open our hearts is not a small thing. You know, I am of the belief that each of us that comes into practice comes in to some degree numb, shut down, turned off, as protection. Life is painful. Everybody gets hurt. And some of us come into practice having been profoundly hurt by people, by situations, by actions. And nobody wants to have that happen. And so we protect. We protect. And we are brilliant in our capacity to protect ourselves without even being conscious that that's what we're doing. And in a way, that makes sense. There's a reason why we do that. And it makes practice rather difficult. I mean, if you just think, consider the language that speaks of Buddha nature, that speaks of your basic mind, your basic body and heart, they're always adjectives that have to do with being open, being large, being spacious, being radiant. And so to allow ourselves to open, to trust, to relax, to be resilient is really essential. And that happens step by step by step. That's why we have to face our karma. We have to face the numbness, the shutting down, all of those strategies we've developed. And that's an important part of the reason why we do our Beyond Fear of Differences training. Right? If we want to liberate the bodies and minds of ourselves and others, which is our vow as bodhisattvas, we cannot pass by some of the greatest forms of suffering that not only have existed in this country and exist in this country, but actually have ever existed in the world. To think that our history is the birthplace of some of the most egregious forms of suffering that have ever existed in the world, and they persist today. So how could we as bodhisattvas, with a sincere heart, aspiring to alleviate suffering for ourselves and others, pass by the suffering that each of us carries with us within our own racialized identities and carries differently because of those different identities, but carries nonetheless? To think that we could somehow truly free ourselves and ignore that just logically does not make sense, is not going to work. Or another way of looking at it is that if we were to set about and to free ourselves and to find some measure of freedom, insight, to gain insight into our mind, to realize enlightenment, and yet this huge piece of the self was still abiding in darkness, that means it's still functioning. It's still operating. It's still having impact on us, which means we will still be acting out of that and impacting others, which means our ability to actually truly enlighten our mind and live that, integrate that into our lives and alleviate suffering is going to be to that degree limited, bound, hampered. And so that's why I feel like it's essential for all of us to be practicing this within this Sangha. And especially for those who are making commitments to train as residents, as students, receiving precepts, chief disciples, board members, particularly for those of us who are in positions of responsibility, where our impact as an individual because of our role is magnified, is increased. Those who hold greater power always have a greater responsibility because the power to do harm is greater. At the same time, the power to do good can also be greater. You see. And so when we do all of the work we need to do as Dharma practitioners today, in our time and place, in this Buddha land, in this Sangha world, that the magnitude of those systems of suffering that exist within us and in our world may seem greater to have to undo, but the liberation will also be greater. And our ability to be in this world in a different way will be greater. Shinji is, as you know, the chief disciple. She has been practicing with us for many years. She's not on the screen. She was. She's there somewhere. But so she's been practicing since the early 2000s. Became a student in 2006, received the precepts in 2010. Her name, Shinji, means truth or reality, ground or earth, which is fitting as she is a farmer and lives on a farm, is also an artist, And during this period of time, because she's going to be coming here for the latter half of this month and May, is in quarantine. And so I've been expressing my gratitude a lot, not just to Shinji for going to all of the, going through all the stuff she needs to do to be able to do that, to be able to come here, but also her partner, Blaze, who is supporting her in all of this. And so she's quarantined in her studio, which is also her sitting and practice space. And we'll be doing that for the 2 weeks so that she can then join us. And then in April, she'll go back and they'll have some time together. And then she'll go back into quarantine, assuming things are still, that's still required, in May. And so just on behalf of the Sangha, I want to again express our gratitude to him, Blaze, for, in a sense, being drawn into this Ango by virtue of Shinji's participation. And so she'll be practicing in that place and really doing quite intensive practice during this time. So we can imagine her there. Dogen said, "The wisdom of equanimity and the freedom of nirvana are without boundary. I pay homage to them." Right? We think of bowing to Buddhas, to the altar, to each other, to our meal. But Dogen is saying, I bow in homage to my own wisdom, to my own basic nature, which is free. We should be able to do that, to pay homage to our own Buddha nature. He says, without being influenced by the opinions of the world, I will engage in the three-month practice period with all of the Buddhas and all the great bodhisattvas of the 10 directions. And I understand without being influenced by the opinions of the world to mean know your own mind. Each of us, let's decide for ourselves how we want to engage during this time. And within that, to have strength and resolution and direction. And then to know that at the very same moment that we're establishing that, we are being influenced by the opinions of the world. That doesn't mean we're not. But to know that we're being influenced and to know those ways in which we're influenced that is not helping, that are not helping. And to understand, see into those views, those opinions, to understand the Saha world that we're living in, doesn't mean that we're automatically free of it, but it does mean that we see it more clearly. In the same way that we, when we see our own untrustworthy thoughts and emotions and so on, impulses, we're still influenced by them. We may still even follow after them on occasion, but it's not the same. When we see that we are under the influence of something rather than just experiencing it as what is true. And so with that clear-mindedness, Dogen says, I will engage in the three-month training period, and not just with the Sangha, but with all of the Buddhas and ancestors. Because I am now embarking on the practice of the great cause of the unsurpassable, wondrous enlightenment of all bodhisattvas, I am free of the bondage of the world. Now, of course, he was speaking from within the walls of a monastery, but they had to deal with stuff. They had to support themselves. They were living in a world. So a cloister is always permeated by the world. But within the embarking on this path, within this practice period, he says, we are freeing ourselves. And then he says, good people, this is a practice period that manifests bodhisattvas. That coming together, we are manifesting as bodhisattvas. The practice period is the Buddha's instructions. It was handed down by the Buddha. An authentic custom that maintains the Buddha Dharma Sangha treasure. The Buddha Dharma Sangha treasure. Those within the House of Buddha Ancestors should therefore wholeheartedly sit the 3-month practice period. I say, Amen. Yes. And so let's really appreciate, particularly those of us who have done many Anghos, what we are being given, what we are giving to each other, the opportunity that this is. We're beginning on a cold March morning, plenty of snow still on the ground. And through the course of this, so we're practicing this Ango with the earth. And so during the course of this Ango, the world, the earth will, that's been sleeping a bit, at least where we are, will wake up and will give birth to song and flower and blossom and fruit and activity and hopefully healing. The great healing, the great healing of our constrained minds and bodies, but also the healing of our time, of our virus, our COVID, and of our division. And so maybe all of us could dedicate this Ango together and our own individual practices to that great healing. So, off we go. Glad to have you aboard.
Thanks for listening. Did you know that Zen Mountain Monastery is live streaming all Dharma talks and daily Zazen during the coronavirus quarantine? Visit our website to learn about all the online programs being offered at this time. Just go to zmm.org and click on the link at the very top of the page, or scroll down and click on Retreats.